Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we'll have results of Super Tuesday, from the presidential race to local congressional assembly and judicial seats. Plus, hear why La Mesa City Council has voted to end remote public comments in a controversial decision. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs has announced earmarked funds for many local projects, and we'll tell you about those on our show today. On Crime Beat, hear about a freeway shooting in La Mesa and a vigil held for a Jewish dentist shot and killed in El Cajon. Flood victims in San Diego County can now apply for CalFresh food benefits, and we'll have the tales. County animal shelters are asking the public to bring the luck of the Irish to pets in need of good homes, and they're waiving adoption fees in some cases. County health officials are warning about an increase in tuberculosis. Then on Destination East County, hear about spring festivals and events coming up, from an Earth Day fair to the opening of Cajon Classic cruise season and more. On Green Scene, learn about a tree planting program in Julian. A San Diego State student injured while helping a domestic violence victim needs help to replace his vehicle damaged during the assault. AT&T is holding hearings on its proposal to end landline telephone service for Californians. The Lemon Grove Sheriff's substation is closed due to flooding, and the IRS has extended tax filing deadlines for local flood victims. Finally, with the Lakeside Rodeo coming up, we'll also be re-airing our interview with a man who's had one of the wildest jobs in East County, Lakeside's Rodeo Clown. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
On Super Tuesday, President Joe Biden won all 16 states holding Democratic contests for president, while former President Donald Trump won at least 12 of the 14 states holding Republican primaries or caucuses. Neither secured enough delegates yet to secure their party's nominations, though both appear on track to do so. Trump was denied a sweep by Nikki Haley, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations and retired governor of South Carolina, who won the Republican primary in Vermont before announcing she is suspending her candidacy. Biden did lose one race in American Samoa, a U.S. territory, where venture capitalist Jason Palmer edged out Biden. It's clear, however, that the November election will be a rematch between President Biden and former President Trump. Vice President Kamala Harris issued a statement after the primary wins, stating that fundamental freedoms are at stake. She said, "Donald Trump has vowed to be a dictator on day one. He has promised to weaponize the Department of Justice, and he has bragged that he is proud of his role in robbing women of their reproductive freedom. He poses a fundamental threat to our democracy, and he must be stopped." She also touted the Biden administration's record of creating good-paying jobs and helping American families. Trump's speech painted a dark portrait of America. "We've watched our country take a great beating over the last 3 years, and nobody thought a thing like this would be possible. We wouldn't have Russia attacking Ukraine," said Trump, although Trump has previously praised Russian President Putin for invading Ukraine and recently said he would urge Putin to do whatever the hell he wants to America's NATO allies. Trump also faulted Biden for inflation and denigrated immigrants as an invasion, adding, "We're a third world country at our borders, and we're a third world country at our elections." Trump's claims of a stolen 2020 election, however, were found false by more than 60 judges, including three whom he appointed. It remains to be seen what issues and controversies will matter most to voters. Biden has faced concerns over his age, though he is only 3 years older than Trump, and Trump has shown clinical signs of dementia in recent weeks, confusing Biden with Barack Obama and Haley with Nancy Pelosi, for example. The twice impeached former President Trump has been found civilly liable for defamation, sexual assault, and fraud. Trump also faces 99 felony criminal counts on charges that include obstruction of justice, mishandling classified documents, paying hush money to a porn star, and conspiring to interfere in the 2020 election results. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat, has finished first in the primary election in the 51st Congressional District with 56% of the vote. She will run off against El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, a Republican, in the November general election. Wells captured 40% of votes tallied so far. Sarah Jacobs fought successfully to bring federal infrastructure dollars to our region, get funding for technology to detect wildfires, and most recently, successfully lobbied the Biden administration to provide federal disaster relief for flood victims in San Diego County. Measures authored by Jacobs helped guarantee safe housing for military members and food security for military families. She serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, the House Armed Services Committee, and the House Select Committee on Economic Disparity and Fairness and Growth. She's also the youngest member of the House Democratic leadership. She has served in policy positions at the U.S. State Department during the Obama administration, at UNICEF and the United Nations, and is a scholar in residence at the Joan B. Kroc School of Peace Studies at the University of San Diego, as well as a policy advisor to Secretary Hillary Clinton during her campaign for president in 2016. Jacob is also the founding chair of San Diego for Every Child, the Coalition to End Child Poverty, and served as the founding CEO of Project Connect, an education nonprofit dedicated to closing the opportunity gap for students around the world by connecting schools to the Internet. That's now a flagship program of UNICEF. Raised in San Diego, she attended local schools and later obtained a Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science and a Master of International Affairs degree in International Security Policy and Conflict Resolution, both from Columbia University. Jacobs, though Jewish, has called on the Biden administration to urge Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to work toward diplomatic solutions, including a permanent ceasefire, release of all hostages, and a two-state solution with Gaza and Israel. On immigration, she says San Diego is on the front lines of the nation's failure to pass comprehensive immigration reform, which Republicans in Congress have blocked. Jacobs did secure $70 million for local nonprofits to care for migrants and asylum seekers locally, but says, "I will keep working to pass permanent reform to relieve the strain on our border." Mayor Bill Wells' goals, if elected, include addressing what he calls the catastrophe of homelessness and untreated mental illness, violent crime, and strengthening border security to stem the migrant surge. Wells has served as El Cajon's mayor since 2013. He previously served on the city council and as a planning commissioner, totaling two decades of public service. Dr. Wells is also a mental health professional with 30 years of experience as a doctor of clinical psychology and a registered nurse. Mayor Wells has played a pivotal role in maintaining El Cajon's balanced budget and $67 million reserve. On his watch, the city successfully attracted new businesses, including hotels and luxury car dealerships, boosting tax revenues. The city also reopened the Performing Arts Center known as the Magnolia. Also a musician, Mayor Wells has headlined concerts at the Magnolia to raise funds for the East County Transitional Living Center Helping the Homeless. He has been a frequent speaker on conservative talk shows locally and nationally. He's called for a shutdown of the border. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Mayor Wells drew controversy by defying public health shutdown orders for businesses, taking a stand against what he called overreaching restrictions. He also expanded the city's police force, hiring officers let go from other jurisdictions due to COVID vaccine requirements. The district has a strong Democratic registration advantage favoring Jacobs. If she wins, Wells will still remain mayor of El Cajon since his term there does not end until 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with outcomes in San Diego County's five congressional races. All five San Diego congressional members have secured first place in their primary elections. Unsurprisingly, given the power of incumbency and name recognition. Each will face a runoff election in November against the second-place contenders. Here are the outcomes based on the vast majority of votes tallied as of our show taping deadline. Republican Congressman Darrell Issa has more than 59% of the votes in his heavily conservative 48th Congressional District, which includes much of East County. His likely runoff opponent will be Democrat Stephen Houlihan, a registered nurse and former Santee councilman. Houlihan drew only about 17% of the votes. However, Democratic primary votes were split among four candidates, with the other three trailing far behind Houlihan. In San Diego's 49th Congressional District, Democratic Congressman Mike Levin breezed to a hefty lead with over 57% of the vote. He is poised to run off against Republican Matt Gunderson, who has 23% of the votes. Democrat Scott Peters leads in the 50th Congressional District over Republican Peter J. Bono by a 58% to 23% margin. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat, will run off against El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells in November in the 51st Congressional District. Currently, Jacobs has 58% and Wells 39%. In the 52nd District, Congressman Juan Vargas, a Democrat, has trounced his only opponent, Republican Justin Lee. Vargas has nearly 66% of the votes over Lee at just above 34%. For complete results and updates, visit the San Diego Registrar of Voters Election Updates page at sdvote.com.
Conservative firebrand Carl DiMaio, leader of the Reform California, now has 43.8% as of today for the 47th Assembly race. Kevin Giza, who is the Democratic Party's endorsed candidate, is in second place with 19% of the votes, followed by Republican Andrew Hayes, a Lakeside School board member and longtime aide to legislators Brian Jules and Joel Anderson with 16%. Giza got a boost from deceptive campaign tactics by DiMaio, whose campaign was funded by full-color mailers and websites urging voters to support Giza, whom DiMaio would prefer to run against, and the November general election. There are three other candidates trailing the leaders. Christine Dungteri, a teacher and Navy veteran, has 11%, followed by a fellow Democrat, Joy Few, a retired revenue officer, with 8%, and Jack Flanders, a Republican biotech company fundraiser, with 3%. DiMaio and Giza appear to be headed to a runoff in November. DiMaio's Reform California group has led efforts in opposing tax hikes. DiMaio formerly served in San Diego's county and hosted a conservative talk radio show. He was holding the government accountable to rebuild the state Republican Party as gold. Democrat Giza works as a business consultant, helping both small businesses and Fortune 500 companies. According to his website, he says he's running to help working families, including bringing well-paying union jobs to the region. So he aims to make college more affordable and accessible, and make increases towards apprenticeship programs and making sure schools are a safe place for children to learn. Reporting for Ace County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Zara Von Ali.
La Mesa Councilman Colin Parent and Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez are maintaining their first and second place positions in the primary race for the 79th Assembly District seat. If their leads hold, the two East County elected official will run off in the November general election, leaving their current council and mayoral positions to be filled in the November election, since both have terms of office ending after this year. As of our show taping deadline, Parent has 40% of the vote, followed by Vasquez with 32% and the educator Lachey Sharp Collins with 28%. All three candidates in this race are Democrats. The outcome shows the power of name recognition, with the two candidates who currently hold public office finishing above Sharp Collins, the party's endorsed candidate. Vasquez has served as mayor of Lemon Grove since 2016. She previously served on the city's planning commission and is also senior public works office for the City of San Diego's Public Works Department. She is the founder of Thrive Lemon Grove, a nonprofit promoting healthy initiatives to benefit residents. If elected, her goals include ensuring neighborhood safety, revitalizing the local economy, championing affordable housing, and combating homelessness. Parent has served on the La Mesa City Council since 2016, where building affordable housing and expanding the city's homeless outreach teams have been his core focuses. He is also executive director of the nonprofit Circulate San Diego. He was appointed by Governor Jerry Brown as director of external affairs for the California Department of Housing and Community Development. He has also served as director of policy at the San Diego Housing Commission. Also an attorney, he has served as a commercial litigator. He co-founded the San Diego Leadership Alliance and served on the board of the League of Conservation Voters in San Diego. Parent's goals as a state assembly member will be walkable and safe neighborhoods and affordable homes, according to his website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
Republican-endorsed candidates won both contested judicial seats in Tuesday's primary election, defeating candidates endorsed by the Democratic Party. For seat 41, Deputy Director Attorney Brian Erickson has over 55% of the vote over Senior Assistant Attorney General Jody Kleesaddle, with under 48% as our show's taping deadline. In seat 43, Prosecutor Verily Summers in the District Attorney office has soundly defeated family law attorney Corn Shepherd by a 64-46 percent margin. Both Summers and Erickson were both endorsed by the San Diego County Republican Party. District Attorney Summers Stephan, the San Diego County Deputy District Attorneys Association, and San Diego County's Deputy Sheriff's Association. Reporting for East County Magazine, KNSJ, this is Zaravon.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The public can no longer provide public comments via phone calls or on Zoom during La Mesa City Council meetings. On February 27th, the council voted to end remote public comments by a 4-1 majority, with Councilman Jack Hsu casting the dissenting vote. Officially, the agenda item cited as justification a memo from the city clerk stating that in the aftermath of COVID, remote public comment is no longer necessary. But the action comes after a barrage of anti-Semitic comments were provided by remote participants at the council's February 13th meeting. During that onslaught, Mayor Marco Rapostathos asked City Attorney Glenn Sabin to address the public. Sabin explained, although we may not like the comments of particular groups or individuals, it has to be tolerated because of the First Amendment. Sabin indicated that cutting off offensive callers would violate the Constitution. Councilman Hsu, who cast the sole dissenting vote to keep remote public comments, noted that it's hard to stomach hearing hate speech, but, he added, I urge the council to not approve this change, stay as we were, and not be intimidated or fear what may happen in the future with regards to public testimony. Hsu noted that council members have the ability to use remote access to participate in council meetings, and so, he said, the public should be given the same ability to participate in our forum in our council meetings remotely. I would hate for our city to take away that forum. La Mesa is not the only city facing this issue. In recent days, several city councils around the nation have reported similar tactics of remote callers touting hate speech. In Matthews, North Carolina, an artificial intelligence detector was used to determine whether the callers were real people or generated from AI. According to the detector, there is a 97% chance that the voice was artificially generated. But there is a good possibility that the technology to detect AI is not as reliable as the technology that has created it. According to the North Carolina Queen City News, a human voice was tested and reported to have a 78% chance to be artificial when, in fact, it was real. Here in La Mesa, not all of the public comments were anti-Semitic, including attendee Gene Carpenter, who denounced the words he heard during the meeting. I've heard a lot of stuff tonight that is just so ugly and disgusting and unnecessary, Carpenter said. This is not how we're going to solve problems. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs has secured $13.5 million for 15 local community projects in San Diego County in an appropriations package that passed the House Wednesday. The Senate is expected to pass this package later this week, and then it will head to President Biden's desk for his signature. These projects were submitted by local governments and nonprofits across California's 51st Congressional District, from Lemon Grove to Grantville to Miramar. Jacobs says this much-needed funding will help address homelessness, support children, prevent wildfires, care for service members and veterans, build beautiful community spaces, and more. $100,000 for Lemon Grove Little League Field to install a retaining wall near a newly formed sinkhole and install facility lights to enable the field to be used at night. $1.9 million for Wildlife Technology Commons to centralize resources that can be accessed and used by wildfire technology researchers and innovators. Data and AI will be used as tools for next-generation fire models. $1.2 million for San Diego Safe Parking Program site expansion to expand overnight safe parking for unhoused individuals living in their vehicles. $850,000 for new San Carlos Library to help build the long-awaited, highly anticipated new flagship branch for the Navajo community serving Allied Gardens, Del Cerro, and San Carlos. $250,000 for Little Saigon street improvements and creation of new parks. $500,000 for Miramar College School of Public Safety renovation to help update and modernize the aging school building. $1.4 million for San Diego Community College District to create family-friendly study centers within SDCCD and expand access to resources that will support students with family responsibilities. $500,000 for the San Diego River Center at Grant Park to construct a 17-acre public neighborhood park and outdoor nature experience facility. $963,000 for San Diego State University for a transmission electron microscope to develop methods for testing cellular structures and allow scientists to observe details as small as individual atoms, and $850,000 for the University of San Diego to construct an innovative teaching kitchen that will support the crucial connection between diet, physical, and mental health and the prevention of chronic diseases such as diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Aravon of the Crime Beat Report. An El Cajon man was injured in a freeway shooting on March 3rd in La Mesa. He was driving a red Chrysler PT Cruiser westbound on Interstate 8, just east of Grossmont Boulevard, when at least two shots were fired. The suspect is described as a black man in a black Ford Fusion sedan, according to California Highway Patrol. The injured motorist was transported to a hospital for treatment. Anyone with information regarding the shooting is asked to contact Officer Wilson at the California Highway Patrol El Cajon Area Office.
The murder of Dr. Benjamin Haruni, a 28-year-old Jewish dentist gunned down inside his clinic in El Cajon on February 29th, has sparked anguish in the Jewish community. The alleged shooter, 29-year-old Mohammed Abdul Karim, has pleaded not guilty to the murder of Haruni and the attempted murders of two other dental clinic workers who were shot and killed. At a candlelight vigil honoring the slain dentist, his brother, Jake Haruni, told the crowd he was one of the most empathetic, selfless, dear souls they have ever known. He added that his brother served people of all backgrounds and economic means, putting the needs of others above his own. He asked, "Why was it Ben who had to be murdered in cold blood, the purest soul taken by an act so hateful?" He denounced senseless acts of hate and said the family will be creating a foundation to stop hate and promote peace and love as his honor and legacy. Rabbi Salman Karlbach said such tragedies happen because there are not enough people that stand up, cry, and scream and say we will not allow this. Dr. Haruni's uncle, Daniel Sadish, who came from Iran, implored people of all faiths around the world to, quote, turn towards unity and love, which will lead to a better world. Police have not yet confirmed a motive for the shooter, who has been described as a disgruntled patient, or whether there is evidence of anti-Semitic hate crimes. However, El Cajon Mayor Wells, who spoke at the vigil, indicated that it is premature to rule out a hate crime. He noted that violence against Jewish people has increased 450% in the United States since the October 7th Hamas attack on Israeli civilians and the war between Israel and Hamas. The mayor said, "Everybody has a right to be shaken up," adding that the FBI is working with El Cajon police to investigate whether hate crimes were committed, poring over the suspect's computers and social media, as well as interviewing his family and contacts. Mayor Wells pledged, "I promise you that we will get to the truth of what happened," adding, "There are a lot of us who are very, very concerned and will not let it stand on our watch." The shooting suspect could face life in prison if convicted on all counts, whether or not hate crime charges are added. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Victims of the flooding disaster in San Diego County are now eligible for temporary food assistance through CalFresh. Qualified applicants will receive a debit card with at least $291 to purchase food. Disaster CalFresh benefits are for people living or working in impacted counties, including San Diego County on January 21st, who experienced damage to their home or workplace due to the disaster, or lost income, or had disaster-related costs such as temporary housing or lost food. To get Disaster CalFresh, flood survivors must apply by Friday, March 15th. You can apply for Disaster CalFresh via phone by calling 866-262-9881, online at benefitscal.com, or in person by Friday, March 15th at designated Disaster CalFresh application sites. There are two Disaster CalFresh sites in East County at the El Cajon Family Resource Center and the County Health and Services Agency in Lemon Grove. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. No matter if they're a Siberian Husky, a German Shepherd, a Chihuahua, a Russian Blue, or a Siamese Cat, everyone's Irish at the San Diego County Animal Shelter during the month of March. Of the pets in shelter care, over 40% of the dogs and cats have been waiting for the forever home for over 30 days. So the county's animal shelter wants the public to help change their luck by adopting or fostering an animal. An adoption special spreads the luck of the Irish all month long. Adoption fees are waived for pets who have been at the shelter for 30 days or longer, pets who are aged 8 years or older, and people aged 60 or older who want to adopt a pet. You can view the animals available for adoption on San Diego Animal Services website during walk-in hours from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at their shelters in Bostonia and Carlsbad. Adoptions are on a first-come, first-served basis. If you're not sure, considering fostering a pet to see if it's a good fit, or just give him or her a break from the shelter environment. Pets benefit tremendously from being in an at-home environment. Learning how to be a part of the family. All basic care supplies such as food, leash, bedding are included in the program. For more information on fostering animals, pet food donations, or volunteering for the shelter, call 619-767-2675 or visit sddac.com.
This is Danita Ramirez with a health report. County public health officials report a 17% increase in active cases of tuberculosis, or TB, cases in San Diego County. Last year, 243 cases were reported. TB is a disease passed through the air from person to person when someone who is sick with TB coughs, speaks, sings, or breathes. Over 175,000 people in San Diego County are believed to have latent TB infection, and most do not know it. Without preventative treatment, as many as 10% of people with latent TB infection may go on to get sick with active, contagious TB disease. County supervisors approved an initiative in 2020 to end TB in San Diego. Through collaboration with 25 public-private partnerships, the initiative works to promote TB prevention through screening, testing, and treatment, particularly for those most at risk of TB. To expand the efforts of this work, the county is hosting the San Diego TB Prevention, Education, and Community Engagement Summit at the Southeastern Live Well Center on March 22nd. Medical professionals and healthcare organizations are encouraged to attend and participate. Symptoms of TB could include lasting cough, fever, night sweats, and unexplained weight loss. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says, if you or a loved one have TB symptoms or think you may have been around someone with TB, it's important that you call your doctor or healthcare provider and get tested. We are seeing more cases of TB, not just in San Diego County, but around the state. She adds that quick action can prevent spread to protect people and our communities. Medicines are available to cure people who are sick with TB and to help prevent people from getting sick if they test positive for TB but do not have symptoms. This is called latent TB infection and means people are infected with TB, but the infection is sleeping and they do not have active TB disease. A chest x-ray can help determine if a person has latent TB. The county operates a TB clinic at the North Central Public Health Center. Public Health Services also offers testing at regional public health centers throughout the county.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Danita Ramirez.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. With spring fast approaching, Many festive and creative events are sprouting up across East County. These include Daffodil Days in Julian, Tomato Mania at the Water Conservation Garden, an Earth Day Fair in La Mesa, an art show in Borrego Springs, a junior fair and barbecue in Lakeside, Cajon Classic Cruises, plus plays, concerts, a stargazing party, and more.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to enjoy Daffodil Days each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. from March 1st through April 14th, or whenever the beautiful yellow blooms are gone. The farm offers you-pick daffodils, as well as other farm activities including a petting zoo, tractor-pulled hay rides, axe throwing, rock climbing wall, and a gift shop with locally crafted items as well as potted daffodils for sale. For more information, visit julianfarmandorchard.com.
The 18th Annual Plein Air Invitational in Borrego Springs promises to be a captivating celebration of art and nature. The event runs from March 4th through April 14th. The Invitational centers around plein air paintings, which capture the unique beauty of the Anza Borrego Desert and Borrego Valley, where desert wildflowers are in bloom. 14 talented artists have been invited to create plein air or outdoor painting. New artwork will be displayed daily in the gallery at the Borrego Arts Institute, and on March 9th from 3 to 5 p.m., the awards ceremony and reception will take place. For more information, visit borregoartsinstitute.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College invites you to Tomato Mania, the world's largest tomato seedling sale. Tomato Mania will be held March 8th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and March 9th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Find rare heirloom tomato seedlings as well as expert advice on how to grow them. Learn more at tomatomania.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present the comic play Five Women Wearing the Same Dress. The show runs March 1st through 24th. During an ostentatious wedding reception at a Tennessee estate, five reluctant, identically dressed bridesmaids hide out in an upstairs bedroom, each with her own reason to avoid the proceedings below. As the afternoon wears on, these five very different women discover a common bond in this funny, irreverent, and touching celebration of women's spirit. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Here's an event to squeal about. A tradition since 1947, the Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair will be held on Sunday, March 17th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Future Farmers of America and 4-H members will be exhibiting and auctioning livestock that they have raised. You can also savor slow-cooked barbecue meats and vie for raffle prizes, as well as get more information about 4-H and FFOA. All proceeds will benefit the nonprofit Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair.
Country music singer and songwriter Lyle Lovett will perform live in concert at the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon March 24th at 7 p.m. Lovett has won 4 Grammy Awards, including Best Country Vocal Performance and Best Country Album. He's recorded 13 albums and released 25 singles, including the hit song Cowboy Man. For tickets, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park and the San Diego Astronomy Association invites you to a star party on the first Friday of each month, starting at sunset at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground parking lot. The next star party is on April 5th. Telescopes will be available to view the nighttime sky, including stars, planets, and constellations, weather permitting. Find more information at Mission Trails Regional Park's website at mtrp.org.
Cajon Classic Cruises opens the season Wednesday night, April 12th, with a full street closure for car shows at Main and Magnolia in downtown El Cajon, along with fun, food, and entertainment for the whole family. Cajon Classic Cruises will continue all summer long, each Wednesday night from 5 to 7 p.m. April 19th will be Girls Night Out, and on April 26th, Cajon Classic Cruises will celebrate the event's 20th anniversary. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The City of La Mesa is inviting residents, visitors, sponsors, and vendors to join its family-friendly Earth Day Fair on Saturday, April 20th at MacArthur Park. The festival is a celebration of the city's commitment to environmental stewardship and a showcase of local businesses that offer eco-friendly products and services. The festival will run from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and feature a variety of activities for all ages and interests.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Irvine with the Green Scene Report. A community workshop on trail improvements at Loveland Reservoir will be held on Thursday, March 14th at the Alpine Women's Club from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. State Senator Brian Jones convened at the workshop along with the Sweetwater Water Authority to hear from the residents concerned about the trail's erosion and limited public access. Due to the erosion caused by severe winter storms in January of last year, the damage occurred after the Sweetwater Water Authority severely drained the reservoir during the drought, exposing areas that suffered damage when the rain came. Senator Jones says, "Many of my consultants and Alpine have talked to me about their vision for Loveland Reservoir and their priorities for maintenance along the trails. As an avid outdoorsman, I love getting out into the trails and enjoying all that nature has to offer." At the collaborative roundhouse table, the community is encouraged to discuss ways to improve the trails and provide elected officials with resident priorities.
This is John Tidwell. Eager to roll up their sleeves and dig for a greener future, students from the Julian Union School District and SDG&E partnered for a tree planting event on February 29th. The occasion brought together local volunteers from the Iipe Nation of Santa Isabel, Wild Ones San Diego, Julian Pathways, students, teachers, and SDG&E employees with a common purpose: to support biodiversity and help reduce the risk of wildfires. Tree planting is crucial in mitigating the risk and impact of wildfires by creating natural barriers and reducing the spread. The tree planting event at Julian Junior High School signifies a collective effort to promote environmental sustainability, enhance wildfire resilience, and build a more resilient community. Planting trees is a key element of SDG&E's sustainability strategy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, foster energy innovation and conservation, and encourage employees and communities to take daily action to support a sustainable future for generations to come. Back in 2021, SDG&E set a goal to plant at least 10,000 trees each year in our region and is on track to meet that goal. Last year, SDG&E surpassed its sustainability tree goal, planting more than 1,440 trees throughout the service area.
A San Diego State University student who intervened to help a victim of domestic violence has suffered injuries including a sprained back and neck, as well as loss of the vehicle he relies on for his livelihood. A GoFundMe site has been set up to help Montoya titled Heroic Intervention. Angelo Montoya was making a DoorDash delivery on February 20th around 1:30 a.m. when he saw a woman trying to escape from an aggressive man. He turned around and drove back toward the scene, where the woman pleaded with Montoya, "Please don't leave me." The man struck the window of Montoya's car, so he called 911 and offered the woman a ride in his car, a Tesla he had earned money to purchase through years of working at a fast food restaurant during high school. A terrified pursuit ensued. The aggressor used his own vehicle, a Camry, to chase and repeatedly try and ram Montoya, ultimately crashing into the Tesla and pushing it into several parked cars. Officers arrived and arrested the man. San Diego Police Department is investigating the incident as a domestic violence case, 10 News confirms. But for 20-year-old Montoya, the road ahead is daunting. He says, "I intervened because it was the right thing to do, aiming to be a good Samaritan and trying to save a domestic violence victim, yet I could never have anticipated the consequences." His Tesla was totaled, leaving him unable to work for DoorDash to support his education. He also faces medical bills and legal costs, as well as an urgent need for transportation. On the GoFundMe site, Montoya says the incident is a reminder of the unpredictable challenges we may face and the impact of standing up for what is right even when it comes at a personal cost.
Time is running out for the public to weigh in on whether AT&T should be allowed to stop offering landline service across most of the Golden State. The California Public Utilities Commission is holding an in-person hearing in Indio on March 14th and a virtual hearing where people can call in on the 19th. Josh Hart with the Grassroots Save Landline Telephones Coalition says AT&T should not be able to give up its obligations as a carrier of last resort because many Californians rely on landlines.
There's a lot of people who live in rural areas where there's no alternatives. A lot of people who use landlines exclusively are injured by electromagnetic fields and cannot even use cell phones because they experience pain.
In a statement, AT&T said customers will not lose access to voice service or 911, as the company will continue to provide traditional landline service to customers with no alternative option. The company declined to say how many landlines it provides, only that 5% of its customers use landline service. A filing with the CPUC lists hundreds of affected communities. You can also go online, enter your zip code, and consult the map of AT&T's territory. Hart notes that landlines become a lifeline when power goes out or when wildfires take cell networks offline.
If the CPUC approves AT&T's application, we're basically saying the market will decide what is profitable for these companies to provide and where, which to many of us living in rural areas means that our areas are going to be neglected in favor of the more lucrative urban areas.
20 other states have already approved similar proposals. However, multiple California counties have come out against it, and 15 members of the state's congressional delegation recently sent the CPUC a letter of opposition. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The January 22nd flooding that ripped through San Diego County, devastating many people's homes and businesses, also inundated the San Diego County Sheriff's Lemon Grove substation, causing heavy damage to the interior. Fortunately, only drywall and other building materials were affected, since all the computers and equipment were relocated to the Rancho San Diego station. Sheriff's staff from Lemon Grove is temporarily operating out of the Rancho San Diego location. Fortunately for local residents, wait times will not be affected, the Sheriff's Department says, since deputies will be dispatched to Lemon Grove immediately after checking in at the Rancho San Diego office. Evidence and other equipment, such as radios and receivers, will be kept there until recovery is completed, with efforts already well underway. Until then, the Lemon Grove office is completely closed. According to the Sheriff's Department, there should be no hindrance for the officers to perform their duties to the community, since the devastation has only caused inconvenience in their scheduling. Residents and businesses that sustain flood damages can visit FEMA centers set up in Spring Valley and San Diego to register for federal relief efforts. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Internal Revenue Service has announced tax relief for individuals and businesses in areas with disaster declarations designated by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. This includes San Diego County residents and businesses impacted by the severe storms and flooding that began January 21st. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs announced she is grateful that the IRS answered my call for tax relief for San Diegans. These taxpayers now have until June 17th to file various federal individual and business tax returns and make tax payments. These include individual income tax returns, IRA, and health savings account contributions, quarterly payroll, and excise tax returns, as well as tax returns for corporations and nonprofits. The IRS automatically provides filing and penalty relief to any taxpayer with an IRS address of record in the disaster area. These taxpayers do not need to contact the agency to get this relief. In addition, the IRS will work with any taxpayer who lives outside the disaster area but whose records necessary to meet a deadline during the postponement period are in the affected area. Taxpayers qualifying for relief who live outside the disaster area need to contact the IRS. This also includes workers assisting the relief activities who are affiliated with a recognized government or philanthropic organization. Taxpayers can also exclude from their gross income any money received from a government agency for reasonable and necessary living expenses, costs to repair their home, or to replace damaged contents. Some individual retirement arrangement or IRA accounts allow taxpayers to take a special disaster distribution not subject to the normal 10% early distribution tax. Taxpayers may also be eligible to make a hardship withdrawal. Each plan or IRA has specific rules and guidance for their participants to follow. The tax relief is part of a coordinated federal response to the damage caused by these storms and is based on local damage assessments by FEMA. For information on disaster recovery, visit disasterassistance.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
The Lakeside Rodeo is coming up April 25th through 28th, so we thought this would be a good time to re-air our interview with the Lakeside Rodeo Clown.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip, to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant. And then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter. And then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks. And so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what, prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was, I tried to be a bull rider. Thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff. And so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so you can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple of things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Put you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said early on, is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've actually did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your...
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed-off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot. Give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they've got a big old body and they got to bend in half to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get the break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring him away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of... I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school, and the guidance counselor, I've noticed, is, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind, and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern day rodeo, we have schools, and the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah, what's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay, the barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena, actually not quite the middle of the arena, it's a little closer to the bucking shoes, and it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land. They can come there, catch the breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's going to do what he wants to do. He's going to do his thing. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody.
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors you see if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it. And that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.